You are listening to the FDIP, the official podcast of the Faculty Development and Innovation Center at Eastern Illinois University. This podcast series aims to illuminate the path to teaching excellence by sharing insights into instructional design, teaching strategies, and innovation. My name is Dr. Michael Gillespie, the director of the Faculty Development and Innovation Center at Eastern Illinois University. And on this episode of the FDIP, I'm sitting down with John W. Blue, the executive director for EIU's Office of Belonging, Access, and Engagement, as well as EIU's Senior Diversity and Inclusion Officer. And we're going to talk about inclusive pedagogy, inclusive excellence, and the importance of belonging. He even has some tips and some insight for faculty members looking to become more inclusive in their pedagogy. So let's get to the interview.
So I'll just ask you to go ahead and introduce yourself. Give us a little background about who you are and what you do.
My name is John Blue. I serve as the Executive Director for Belonging, Access, and Engagement, as well as a Senior Diversity and Inclusion Officer here at Eastern Illinois University. Been working in higher education for 20 years now, I think it is, around 20 years, in different functional areas. I started working in diversity work, more specifically, full-time, starting in 2016.
So we're talking about inclusive excellence and inclusive pedagogy today. And so I thought it would be good to start just by talking about what is inclusive excellence. So if you could define that for us to get us started on our conversation.
Okay. So it's a holistic approach that combines diversity, equity, and inclusion with the pursuit of academic and institutional excellence. It's not just about increasing numbers or ticking boxes. It's about creating an environment where everyone can thrive and contribute meaningfully.
So the inclusive is, as you said, it's holistic. Mm-hmm. It's being able to bring in all the different aspects of success.
Correct.
And inclusive brings that in. So why do it? What are some benefits of this?
Well, I think in essence, especially here at Eastern and other universities across the nation, I think when you think of inclusivity and how that has a positive impact on your retention of your students, we know currently right now this is probably the most diverse student body in the nation right now currently going to school. And we have to look at our student population in a holistic manner. They're bringing their full selves to campus, and we cannot engage with our students as if they're all the same. They have different abilities, different backgrounds, different socioeconomic statuses, religious affiliation, so on and so forth. Being traditional and non-traditional, you know, we have more non-traditional students going to school now than ever before. So it's just very important that we look at our students holistically from a holistic standpoint to have a positive impact on the retention of our students and ultimately a positive impact on our graduation rates going forward.
So what is it about this that benefits retention? I mean, what is it about when a student feels seen or heard or included that is going to build on their potential for retention, to stick around, to see this through, to be successful?
I think that when students see that their professors, the different directors and associate directors and coordinators around campus see them as their full, whole, authentic self, they feel that they feel seen, they feel heard, they feel a part of the campus, they feel that sense of belonging, which in turn, once you have that sense of belonging or that sense of belonging has been created, those students are more likely to be retained in the institution and more likely to stick it out because they feel like they have the support and people genuinely care about their being holistically.
It's a lot of work, right? It's a lot to do.
It is.
And there's a lot of challenges to this. What are some common challenges that we face when we are trying to have this inclusive excellence?
I think when it comes to inclusive excellence, I think some of the challenges can be first starting with self, starting to look at our lived experiences, look at why we view various groups or various individuals the way that we view them, and then kind of getting to the root of those views that we have, right? And that kind of self-reflection is challenging. Mm. It can be quite jarring because you are going to be questioning who you are as a person at the root, mm-hmm. and looking at, you know, thinking about your upbringing and what you've been exposed to and how you've been reared in your family structure. And nobody wants to say, you know, grandpa was prejudiced or grandpa was a racist. And you are really questioning everything about yourself, you know, mm-hmm. everything that you have been taught. And so it's very challenging for people to start that self-reflection. And when it gets hard, keep pushing forward to kind of break past that perspectives and stereotypes that you've picked up throughout the time that you have been raised mm-hmm. or whatnot.
And that's the self, right?
That's the self, yes.
So institutionally, mm-hmm. you know, what are we talking about? What are some challenges that are beyond an individual or a department, but that we see on an institutional basis?
I think from an institutional basis, I'm thinking in terms of resources. Not every institution has the resources to be inclusive mm-hmm. of everyone. We know that, let's take, for instance, regional PWIs, right, not predominantly white institutions. Many of those institutions were built and were built not really thinking or taking in consideration people with different types of abilities, people from different socioeconomic status backgrounds, so on and so forth. So having the resources available to even start the process of even thinking in terms of being an organization or institution that is inclusive and practicing inclusive excellence, that's a major hurdle. Also, when you think about faculty, thinking about the time that it takes that you have to kind of put aside and say, okay, I've taught this class for 15, 20 years. I may not have actually changed my curriculum in 15 or 20 years. And mm-hmm. I'm still teaching this current student the way that I was teaching students 10 and 15 and 20 years ago.
That's right.
Today's student is not yesterday's student. And so you have to really, one, think about the student holistically. Their background. We know, I always say right now, we know that our students before the pandemic, they were coming in, some were coming in not prepared to be successful academically. But we know with the pandemic, that has made it four times as worse, right? Mm-hmm. So we have more students coming into the universities and community colleges that are not set up for success to be academically successful. So now we have to, you know, take out the time, look at the curriculum, see kind of what have we been doing, but how now can we go forward and really make the curriculum inclusive and thinking about different learning styles, thinking about how we actually put together syllabus or mm-hmm. the syllabi, and look at the language that we're utilizing in the syllabi. How can we make that more welcoming? How can we make that that more inclusive? How can we be more intentional with talking to students in the actual syllabi about learning outcomes and how we can help them connect the dots of why this class is important, how it connects to other classes, how it connects to your actual career. I think with this generation of students, you have to show them the benefit of taking this class. If not, they're going to look at it as this is a waste of time.
Right. Part of that inclusive nature of this is making sure that they get the full picture of the purpose of the course, right?
Right.
There's an inclusive aspect to that as well. So you talked a little bit about some things that you can do, updating your syllabus, updating some of your lecture content, making that to be inclusive. What are some other examples of inclusive practices that we know are beneficial for student success?
I think first and foremost, you have to set a clear expectation with students. Just being clear and concise at the beginning, making sure that students understand that your classroom setting is a safe space, that you are encouraging questions, but questions that are respectful of everyone in the room and of everyone that is not even in the room. Just being respectful and thinking through those things instead of just blurting out various questions, but you are encouraging them to ask questions, mm-hmm. right? I think providing students to engage in collaborative learning. We do our students a service if we get them into the habit of actually participating in collaboration and teamwork. Because when they go into their professional settings in whatever industry they decide to go into after graduating from EIU, they're going to have to work with teams. They're going to have to know how to communicate properly. And right now, with our students so in tune with social media and the things, right, sometimes it's very difficult, especially for our traditional students. It's difficult for some of our traditional students to actually be able to hold conversations with individuals that they don't know. And sometimes even, especially when you're thinking about inside of the classroom, holding conversation with a faculty member who you look at as an authority figure, and it may be somewhat intimidating to even have a conversation or to get clarification on an actual assignment or paper that you have to write and things of that nature. So a lot, in many instances, they're very intimidated by even trying to start that conversation. Mm-hmm. Right. So providing just a safe space within the classroom as well, trying to be as encouraging as possible. If you think about our students that come from Chicago, for instance, they come from the city. They're coming to EIU. It's almost polar opposites of where they've been. Mm-hmm. You know, they come here, it's stark quiet. I've had students tell me in the short time that I've been here, they're like, it's so quiet. It's nothing to do here. And I'm just like, well, when you were raised in a city that's chaotic,
yes,
coming to a Charleston, Illinois is very like, It's a culture shock.
Yeah.
And then you're coming from a very diverse area to a very homogenous area, institution. And sometimes in some instances, this is the first time they've actually had classes with people that are different from them, be it race, religious affiliation, so on and so forth. So just trying to make sure that our classroom spaces are a safe space for our students.
So one of the topics that we talk about quite a bit in instructional design is this idea of universal design for learning, or what we call UDL. And we talk about this in the same language that we talk about inclusive pedagogy and inclusive excellence. Can you speak a little bit about universal design for learning and how it ties in with some of these ideas about inclusive pedagogy?
So with the UDL, it's a framework to improve and optimize the teaching and learning of all people based on how people just learn, right?
Right.
It's all about creating a curriculum that can be used and understood by everybody in the classroom, no matter their background that they come from. You know, whether you're first generation, first to go, you know, you're a legacy student, you have any type of ability that is different from quote unquote the norm, air quotes here.
Sure.
You know, since all learners are unique, you have to have a flexible curriculum inside of the classroom. You can't assess all of your students the same exact way every time you're doing assessments, right? Mm-hmm. For an example, and when we're talking about assessments, So I taught I was a student success coach at a previous institution. And so for my final, I didn't want to do a paper. And so the reason why I didn't want to do a paper, because I knew where my students were developmentally as far as their writing, right? We were working on that, but I wanted to give them a choice in reference to their final assessment. So their final assessment was, you can either submit a paper or you can actually make a video. And that video, and both of them were the same topic. So you were either writing about your first semester, first year experience at the institution, and you can put that in, you know, an essay format or whatnot. And or you could actually make, I had them do YouTube videos, and they can put it on a private channel. Mm-hmm. And just to see the way that some of my students flourished with that assignment. I'm talking about, I had phenomenal, you know, I had really good papers from my students who really, you know, didn't have a problem with writing. But with the students who decided to do the actual videos for their final assessment in the classroom, I got some phenomenal, you know, submissions. Like I'm talking about editing, music, video clips. I mean, it was phenomenal. Now, some of them were a little sketch, but it just, you know, I just changed it up a little bit within the classroom just to make it a little bit more equitable in the classroom and to try to play towards the student's strengths.
Sure. Right. And allow them to operationalize their strengths mm-hmm. too, and have that choice a little bit in there. And so universal design, I think you capture it really well. The inclusive aspect that I really like about it is just that, is it allows students to really kind of find their authentic voice. And mm-hmm. We talk a lot about this, whether it's going to be in a writing class or maybe it's, you know, I teach a statistics class. It's still offering different ways in these types of courses that might not lend themselves to the variety opening ourselves up to ask students to, okay, you figure out what is going to be best for you to represent and show us just what you've learned this semester. Some great outcomes from there. And the students are probably a lot happier with it too, would you think?
Yeah, I thought that from the feedback that I got from the students, they were very pleased with the opportunity to be able to choose.
But we're talking about ways to get them included. So universal design, as we were talking about, crosses over quite a bit with inclusive pedagogy. Inclusive excellence is something that we look at in all aspects of a course, you know, and we're talking about anything from syllabus day to the final exam. You want to talk a little bit more about some, maybe some practices, you know, expanding on what you've already said about syllabi or ways you can have discussions in classrooms, maybe some other things that help promote inclusivity within our courses, regardless of modality.
I think also taking in consideration representation in the actual curriculum, as far mm-hmm. as ethnic backgrounds or racial backgrounds that you're providing within, say, for instance, if it's a case study, you know, having an individual within the case study with that's differently abled or is a part of a different group, a LGBTQ plus group, or just taking in consideration things of that nature. Also taking in consideration just the language that we use, how we are questioning or assessing our students, and taking in consideration their lived experiences, mm-hmm. because we can very well have an assessment piece or a test or an exam or whatnot and ask questions on this particular assessment. And it's stated one way. And your student that is from rural Illinois will understand specifically what you're talking about. But a student from the south side of Chicago may not catch on to what it is that you are asking in this particular question or whatnot, or the essay or essay question or whatnot. So just taking in consideration your students and their lived experiences mm-hmm. that they're bringing their full selves to campus.
One thing that I talk about when I do workshops on similar topics like this and I'm working with faculties is you want to be able for your students to see themselves in the course content mm-hmm. in some way, whether it's a case study or, you know, if you're teaching in a specific discipline that perhaps has a majority white student body mm-hmm. and you have a student of color in there, bringing somebody in or some kind of course material so that student can see themselves in this field or feel like they're being represented right. or also, you know, very conscientious decisions that we would have to make. You talked a little bit about assessment. And I think one of the important pieces of it is culturally responsive feedback, is feedback that our learners are going to be able to read, but also then understand. Mm-hmm. Can you say a little more about that?
I was told about a situation that happened at an institution where they had a couple of students that approached a professor in a classroom and was asking various questions, but they were at this professor's desk. For that professor, at that particular institution, they kind of felt like the students were being aggressive. And they were just asking about feedback about either an assignment or an exam or something of that nature. That particular student ended up, or those two students ended up, you know, kind of being reported for behavioral issues. And so when I look at it as a black male, I look at it from a cultural standpoint of, I'm going to go to the instructor to ask the instructor questions at their desk because I don't want everybody in my business. Mm-hmm. And culturally, for most Black people that I know, that's how we are going to handle that situation. We are going to come to the desk. We're going to ask you the questions at the desk because we don't want to involve everybody in the classroom in this question, because we don't want everybody to know what's going on with us or what kind of grade we've made or whatever, right? Mm-hmm.
So, what about outside of the classroom?
So outside of the classroom. So what I will say is that if a student, and I'm only going to speak from my experience, if a student who is Black or maybe even Latino doesn't feel welcomed in the class, they don't feel a welcoming environment, they don't feel that that faculty member is a really truly sees them holistically, 9 times out of 10, they're not going to the office hours because it's going to be, they probably feel like this particular professor is cold, and they're not going to be helpful. So they won't understand. And sometimes you have to break it down and getting them to understand at the beginning of the semester the importance of office hours and how it's your opportunity to have that one-on-one feedback with your professor in an office setting or virtually, because you have to be flexible with those office hours as well, right? But the students have to be able to feel like the faculty member is not just going through the motions and that they are here because they want to see that student succeed. Right. And students, they know if you really care about them or not. They really know. They don't have to guess.
No, they feel it, right? And they get it right away.
Exactly.
And I think that when in my conversation with faculty who are experiencing some frustration with students not coming to office hours or not getting interaction in the class or, you know, answers to discussions. I think we oftentimes talk about, so what are you doing about this? Like, well, how are you presenting? How are you leading into these discussions? What are the types of things? Yeah. Because you want your students to feel comfortable. You want to build that rapport with them. But if you're not doing anything to help build that, then it's hard, you know, to create that culture inside of your classroom that will then translate outside of your classroom.
And I will say that it's one of those things that I feel like students have to see you as just a regular human being. I think sometimes they look at professors when they go in the classroom as a person that is larger than life.
You started off by talking about having a sense of self and kind of doing a little bit of self-reflection on your practices. That might be one where to kind of get out of your comfort zone a little bit and allow people to see you as a real person, especially your students.
Especially during that first day, I tell people all the time, is the first day in the classroom with a new group of students is your time to shine. That is your time to really try to make that connection, try to make sure that you are seen as not Professor XYZ, but this is Professor XYZ, but he has these lived experiences that he comes to the table with. So that first, you know, that first class period is very important when you're going over that syllabus and trying to establish a relationship with your students in the classroom.
Great. What other ideas do you have for how we can work with faculty to help maybe their professional development, but also inclusive excellence in general?
I think, one, faculty have to use the resources that are available to them. So the FDIC is available to them. Just looking at the website, you all have a lot of resources within the FDIC. I don't know how many faculty on campus are taking advantage of all of the resources that are housed here. The web accessibility compliance that you guys have on there. And I know when I look at that, I think about accommodations,
right?
And accessibility for our students and making sure that our faculty know what resources that are out there, making sure that our faculty know about just the resources on the student affairs side, the food pantry, for instance.
Right.
You know, we have so many of our students on campus that suffer from food insecurity, and we have to be knowledgeable about that kind of stuff so we can make sure that we can forward or you know, take them to the resources so that they can be help out with their academic success.
Sure. You know, we're getting down to the last little bit of our time together. And you talk a little bit about how to do this. Maybe give us a little encouraging word or two about, you know, inclusive excellence, inclusive pedagogy, and just how to keep marching forward.
It's not a destination. You're always striving to be better, right? And so it's a thing of trying to and being open to always learning new things, new concepts. The field of diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's been around as far as a functional area in higher education for around 50, 60 years. So pretty young, right? Mm-hmm. But diversity, equity, and inclusion work has been going on before it was an actual functional area. Right. And that's what people don't understand, right? Mm-hmm. And we just have to kind of keep moving forward in terms of the journey that is inclusive excellence. And it's not a one-time initiative.
Yeah.
It's a number of initiatives because we're trying to find out what is going to work with all of our students that sure. we have at the institution to make sure that they are academically successful, that they are retained, and that we ultimately graduate them from the institution. And if those students graduate from EIU with a sense of belonging to the institution, down the line, that may turn into increased donor dollars.
Right.
You know, and we can't always depend on the federal government or the state to support institutions of higher education.
Right.
And those donor dollars are going to be very much more important
right.
in the coming future. And that's one of the things I will tell people, too, is that once you have helped to create and sustain that sense of belonging in your student population, mm-hmm. your students who go on to be alum, those are your greatest recruiters.
That's right.
Those are your greatest recruiters. But if you don't invest in, you know, inclusive excellence and you don't help to create and sustain a sense of belonging in your student population, you're going to bleed students out mm-hmm. and those students are going to go back home and they're going to talk really bad about your institution. Yeah. Well, this is my experience. This is how I was treated. And now in order to replace that one student, you probably have to recruit 10 students to replace that one student.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and yeah. so we want to make sure that it's not a revolving door mm-hmm. and that our students are staying, they're persevering through the obstacles that will come mm-hmm. And they have a good time here at EIU, have a very, a great education, a great social experience, and they leave here feeling like they are a part of this institution.
Sure. Right. Yeah, they have that connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like going forward, doing everything sort of with this idea, like how can we be inclusive mm-hmm. with this program we're starting, with this new RSO, with, you know, you name it, mm-hmm. right? How does that fit into this? Because eventually it's just going to be the culture shift mm-hmm. that really this kind of work takes.
Yeah, I mean, and it takes years to shift the paradigm and the culture shift. It does take years, and some people think it's an overnight process, and I'm like, mm-hmm. no, it's something that takes years, and you have to kind of keep working on it.
Yeah.
And eventually the tide will turn, you will be on your way, well on your way to being an inclusive excellence pillar in the higher ed community, so to speak.
There you go. Well, I tell you what, yeah, you got a silver bullet with you getting you here, and everything that you've done so far is fantastic. I got to hear you speak a couple times over the summer about the things that you're planning on doing in the fall with mm-hmm. your office and reviving a few programs. You want mm-hmm. a top five list of things you're most excited about from your office?
Top five list from the office. Okay. I guess number one would be the creation and the launch of the Belonging, Access, and Equity Council. That's a campus-wide council that will assist with writing the first diversity strategic plan for the institution. And so we'll start that council September 11th is our first meeting.
Okay.
So we pretty much, I think we have everybody in place except for our student rep. We have to wait till the fall to figure out who the student rep from SGA will be.
Nice.
Next would be just the revamp and relaunch of the Strong Man organization, which is open to all students who identify as male. But the purpose of the organization is to assist EIU with the recruitment, retention, and graduation rates of Black and Latino males, you know, according to the data that we have in reference to our retention data.
Yeah.
And then we have a female version of that Strong She that we're going to revive as well. I already have a couple of advisors, one in the Dean of Students office, I think one in housing, mm-hmm. and possibly one in enrollment management. We'll see. But reviving that. And then our first, I don't know if it's EIU's first, or maybe it's the first in a long time, but doing a EIU Martin Luther King Jr. Community breakfast,
yeah.
and where we're going to have a community discussion, because it actually falls on Inauguration Day. And I think you'll have people in the audience who feel a certain way. And there's some people in the audience that are going to be very, very happy of the results of the of the election that's upcoming. Right.
Right.
But we need to talk, have a very transparent conversation about as a community on how we're going to move forward as a community here in Charleston and Coles County.
And the name is new, too.
A week and a half ago. Yes. Yeah. And so the reason why I wanted to change the name is because I always feel like we have to evolve with the times. Mm-hmm. Inclusion is great, right? People, you know, you want to include everybody. That's great. But just because you're included, that doesn't mean you feel like you belong.
Yeah.
And belonging is the actual goal here, right? The belonging piece is very, very important, where we are going to make sure that, you know, those students that belong have that strong sense of belonging to the campus, and we can retain more of our students and graduate more of our students here at the institution. So that's the goal.
Thank you for this, John. This is fantastic. I really enjoyed this conversation. Lots of great things for us to all learn from. And we're, again, just so happy that you're here at Eastern and working with us to be able to get to that belonging excellence.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. And I'm excited to be here as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank John Blue for joining the FDIP today. We've certainly learned quite a bit from him and his insight and his 20 years of experience in higher education doing this work. And we want to thank you for listening to the FDIP, the official podcast of the Faculty Development and Innovation Center. And until next time, take care of yourself. Thank you.